It's Wednesday, July 1st, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com.
Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Want to make an announcement about the Stash front page. You may be seeing posts on there from a new Stasher named Lynette. Lynette is an intern working for Normal, and she's a recent graduate of Cal State Fullerton. Go Titans. And she's working on the project to survey the members of Congress who might be amenable to lobbying on Barney Frank's act to end adult penalties for marijuana. And I had this email folder just chock full of the responses that you've sent me in our Politicians on Pot segment. So we combined them both, and so now Lynette will be in charge of posting those Politician on Pot references. Check out the Stash blog for some more information on that, and if your politician hasn't been featured on the Stash, send them an email through our Normal Take Action Center. All the instructions are right there on the Stash blog. I've also received some calls from people, again, looking to form Normal chapters. Got a call from North Carolina from a gentleman who listens to the podcast and says that it really changed his life, and I totally appreciate that compliment. That's quite amazing to me. Also, South Carolina, around the Charlotte area, a group looking to start a statewide South Carolina chapter. And John H. from Central Tennessee, one of our Stashers, emailed also to say that he's looking to put together a chapter somewhere between Knoxville and Nashville. So check that out on the Stash blog, stash.normal.org. And if you live in any of those areas, send me an email at stash@normal.org. And I'll put you in touch with these people. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we start with your hemp headlines and an important message from Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre, underscoring the importance of home cultivation in any legalization scheme, whether it be medical or personal. We take a look at a vote by a panel of the Food and Drug Administration that's recommending pulling acetaminophen-laced narcotics from store shelves and from prescriptions. That would include Vicodin and Percocet. The District of Columbia is now free to explore decriminalization in medical marijuana as Congress has dropped the 11-year-old bar amendments. And a 4-year-old hemp festival in Ontario, Canada, looks like it's going to be closing its doors due to police harassment. Today is Wednesday, so for our dose of cannabis science, we're going to be talking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine and replaying an interview from last year where we took a look at the history of cannabis and human beings. In our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we've got the best reggae song from the American Marijuana Music Awards, Andrew Mystic with Cassava. And in a new segment we entitle Normal Newsmakers, we're going to be speaking with an everyday cannabis consumer, a man by the name of Juan Bocanegra, who's training for an Ironman triathlon and was a former competitive swimmer for the country of Guatemala. So much for that amotivational slacker syndrome, huh? And on a personal note, I'm also proud to announce that the government of the state of Oregon has passed Senate Bill 782. This is a bill that requires the Board of Pharmacy to reschedule marijuana somewhere between Schedule 2 and Schedule 5. It's largely a symbolic measure, but hey, I like symbols. No, not those kind of symbols. Well, you know what I mean. It's the summer of bud and change is in the air. It's time for your normal daily audio stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines.
The importance of permitting consumers the right to cultivate marijuana for personal use by Normal Executive Director Alan St. Pierre. For nearly 40 years, Normal has provided a voice in the public policy debate for the tens of millions of Americans who enjoy cannabis responsibly. Normal is, and has always been, the marijuana consumers' lobby. In the short run, Normal favors the elimination of all criminal and/or civil penalties prohibiting the possession of cannabis for personal use, regardless of whether one is using it for medical purposes or for personal pleasure. Further, Normal opposes sanctions that presently prohibit the not-for-profit transfer of small amounts of cannabis between adults. This policy, called decriminalization, was the recommendation of the National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse in their groundbreaking 1972 report, Marijuana, A Signal of Misunderstanding. Versions of cannabis decriminalization have now been adopted in 13 states. Cannabis consumers are ordinary Americans who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute in a positive way to their communities. We are not criminals. Just as millions of Americans enjoy a beer or a glass of wine at the end of the day, we enjoy sharing a joint, or for that matter, a vapor bag, when we relax in the evening. Of the nearly 900,000 marijuana arrests in America each year, about 90% are for possession of small amounts for personal use. Continuing with this draconian policy makes no sense. That is why 3 out of 4 Americans now support decriminalizing the personal possession and use of cannabis. Normal's ultimate political goal is the establishment of a legally regulated market where consumers can obtain their cannabis in a safe and secure environment. This policy is generally called legalization. As our country discovered when we experimented with alcohol prohibition, it is only by providing a legally regulated market that we can significantly reduce the crime, corruption, and violence associated with a criminal black market. Normal supports the imposition of state and/or federal age and quality controls governing the commercial production, sale, and use of cannabis to assure public safety and to advise the consumer of the strength of the variety of cannabis being purchased. And, importantly, we support the imposition of a reasonable tax on commercial cannabis sales that could raise substantial revenue for the various states, to be used for drug education and other programs to encourage responsible use and to discourage abuse. But as we work toward these goals, it is crucial that we underscore the importance of permitting consumers the option to grow their own cannabis. Alcohol consumers possess the legal right to create their own home brew free from government interference. Although the vast majority of alcohol drinkers never utilizes this freedom and prefers the convenience of purchasing alcohol at a retail outlet, that option remains available to those who wish to use it. We believe that similar regulations should govern the non-retail production of cannabis. The cultivation of cannabis for personal use is the single most important element of the normal legalization proposal. Allowing for the legal personal cultivation of cannabis provides consumers with the option to grow their own product should commercially available sources offer cannabis that fails to meet consumers' needs because it is excessively expensive, too heavily taxed, or of inferior quality. The mere threat of consumers exercising this option should be sufficient to assure that the legal market for cannabis will be responsive to the needs of consumers and will not be exploitive. So, when any organization or any state or federal legislator proposes legalizing cannabis, either for medical use or for personal pleasure, but forbids the consumer from growing their own cannabis, those of us who lobby on this issue must insist on amendments to permit personal cultivation. Otherwise, we, cannabis law reformers, trade away our only leverage to keep the big corporations and the government honest and responsive to cannabis consumers. FDA recommends lowering dosages of acetaminophen, quote, the leading cause of liver failure, end quote. From Yahoo News. Government experts say prescription drugs like Vicodin and Percocet that combine a popular painkiller with stronger narcotics should be eliminated because of their role in deadly overdoses. A Food and Drug Administration panel on Tuesday voted 20-17 that prescription drugs that combine acetaminophen with other painkilling ingredients should be pulled off the market. The FDA has assembled a group of experts to vote on ways to reduce liver damage associated with acetaminophen, one of the most widely used drugs in the U.S. Despite years of educational campaigns and other federal actions, acetaminophen remains the leading cause of liver failure in the U.S., according to the FDA. Panelists cited FDA data indicating 60% of acetaminophen-related deaths are related to prescription products. Acetaminophen is also found in popular over-the-counter medications like Tylenol and Excedrin.
Gosh, that doesn't make any sense. I looked all over the federal drug schedules and I couldn't find acetaminophen. It's an over-the-counter drug, so any adult can just go in and buy as much as they want off of a store shelf. Maybe even kids, too. I can't recall any prohibitions against it. Yet, it is estimated to cause 2,600 hospitalizations and 450 deaths per year. It's also very bad for your liver.
But some people are more susceptible to acetaminophen toxicity and can experience liver damage even at the recommended dose. A study by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration showed that about 20% of people with acetaminophen-related liver toxicity had taken less than the recommended daily amount. For other people, a dangerous dose is not much higher than the recommended dose. That is, the window between a therapeutic dose and a toxic dose is smaller for acetaminophen than it is for many other drugs. Some experts also believe that taking acetaminophen for several days in a row may cause a dangerous buildup of the drug in the body. Acetaminophen is more likely to cause liver toxicity at near normal doses when used by people who drink alcohol. In fact, people who drink regularly may be more prone to liver damage even if they do not consume alcohol and acetaminophen at the same time. There appears to be added risk even if people take acetaminophen a few hours, or in some cases longer, before or after drinking.
Gee whiz! A drug that has medical value and an accepted safe use under medical supervision, yet is hepatotoxic and sometimes fatal. Why, you'd think that drug would be on the controlled substances list and require a doctor's prescription, wouldn't you?
Ha! But you missed the part that mentions potential for abuse and psychological dependence. Since acetaminophen doesn't get you high or addicted, the government doesn't care so much about controlling your access to it. Even if more people overdose on acetaminophen than on alcohol in any given year. But if it is a natural, unprocessed herb that gets you high, it doesn't matter that it has never killed anyone, that it's safe to use without medical supervision, and that it has numerous medical applications, it's going up on Schedule 1. And if you're caught with it, you're going to jail. And if that gives you a splitting headache, the jailers will be glad to get you a Tylenol.
Congress lifts bar amendments forbidding the District of Columbia from medical marijuana and decriminalization. A House Appropriations Subcommittee has lifted a long-standing budget rider banning the district government from spending any money to decriminalize marijuana. The Financial Services Panel, which has oversight of D.C., has removed from the 2010 budget an 11-year-old language outlawing the district's use of federal or local funds to legalize marijuana or reduce penalties for its possession or distribution. Representative Jose Serrano, the subcommittee chairman, said the budget bill, quote, allows the district to conduct and implement a referendum on the use of marijuana for medical purposes, as has been done in various states, end quote. The district voted on medical marijuana once before, in 1998, but the votes were declared invalid. Former Representative Bob Barr raced to have his anti-legalization language added to the budget 2 weeks before the initiative vote was held. When the ballots were unofficially tallied nearly a year after they were cast, it was learned that 69% of the voters backed legalization. It has always struck me as ironic that in the land of the free, our capital was built by slaves, and that in a country born from a revolution because of taxation without representation, the citizens in the capital are taxed but get no vote in the House or Senate. Add to that irony that the people in the seat of democracy were unable to exercise self-rule on the matter of marijuana because the Congress wouldn't allow them to count their votes. Also ironic that former Representative Bob Barr, who introduced these democracy-killing amendments against marijuana, is now a paid lobbyist for the Marijuana Policy Project. The author of these anti-marijuana bills came around faster than the Congress has. Annual Ontario Hemp Fest festivities will cease this year due to police harassment. Ontario Provincial Police have harshed the Hemp Fest buzz once too often, say event organizers who plan to make this year's celebration of medicinal marijuana the region's last. In recent years, the four-day event has been the focus of what organizer Rob Waddle contends is unwarranted police presence, with ride checks that focus on interrogation and hindering access rather than weeding out impaired drivers. Waddle said, quote, "It's the harassment of people traveling to and from the festival. The Constitution and Charter of Rights guarantee us the right to gather peacefully and demonstrate against unjust laws, which is what we're doing. The police keep interfering with our people and the right to gather," end quote. Waddell said the vehicle infractions and questioning of vehicle occupants are, quote, "petty things," end quote, meant to interfere with a staunchly pro-marijuana event, and questioned why Ontario Provincial Police have been accompanied by law enforcement from the United States. This year's August 27th through August 30th gathering will be called Hempfest, the End of an Era. Here's something fun you can do next year if nobody else takes over and keeps this Hempfest alive. Count parked cars in bar parking lots that weekend, and note how many people leave in them. Because all those cars in bar parking lots are the cars of designated drivers, right? That means you have to have at least two people per car, at least one sober one, and the other who may or may not be sober. Now, don't count the employees' cars. We don't expect them to be drunk. Just the patrons who leave and their cars. If you divide the people by the cars and come up with less than two, we can pretty much guarantee somebody's driving after drinking. Yeah, sure, maybe they were drinking Sprite. Maybe they stopped drinking beer a couple hours before they left. Maybe their blood alcohol content's only 0.04 and they'll drive fairly well. But don't you think we should have a squad car from the Ontario Provincial Police parked out by that bar, just in case? Now, let's count up how many bars there are in the province of Ontario.
I'm not going to bother to look it up, but I'll hazard a wild-ass guess that it is a number greater than the number of Ontario Provincial Police squad cars. Suffice to say that even if we parked every squad car near a bar's parking lot, there would be plenty of bars without one. Whatever that number is, times whatever that car-to-patron ratio tells us, suggests to me that there are a whole lot of people driving drunk. We know where they are, and we're not doing much about it. Why does the police vigilance against hemp festivals, in the name of protecting the public from impaired drivers on one summer weekend, not seem to apply every weekend to places where we know drunks park their cars? NormalCon 2009, Yes We Cannabis, September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary, and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy, the answer is no. I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at norml.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims
are reefer madness?
Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at
cannabis science.
Here we are in the middle of the week once again for our dose of cannabis science, but actually we're going to take a detour off the scientific path and maybe take a little bit more look at history and literature and art. And joining us again is Dr. Mitch Earlywine from State University of New York at Albany. And Dr. Mitch, welcome back.
Happy to be on the show.
You know, I talk to Steve Bloom every Friday on the Celeb Stoner Report, and we were talking about the 2008 Stony Awards and how 2008 has kind of been a renaissance year in marijuana in films, with films like Pineapple Express and Harold and Kumar and The Whackness and so on. But you sent me an email, and I thought this was kind of an interesting topic, and that's the idea that this really isn't anything new, that even before the modern times, we have lots of references to cannabis and hashish throughout literature.
Oh, it's fun when you really take a close look at it. When you go back, basically ancient times in France, Rabelais, in his book Gargantua and Pantagruel, mentions cannabis as treatment for horses and various problems that the horses may have, but also makes, you know, hints about it as a potential hallucinogen or insight advancer, if you will. And then by the 1830s or so, French physician Jacques Joseph Moreau, and I'm sorry if I'm, you know, mutilating the French, got together a group that they called the Hashish Club, and it was basically a lot of literary, performance artists, musicians, things like that, who got together once a month, and basically Jacques was their provider. He dished out the hash and basically watched everybody and wrote a book about it that actually got an award in France later on basically some insights he had about how cannabis might help the mentally ill.
Now, as far as other European countries, was there any sort of references in England or Shakespearean references or anything?
Well, it's curious because Shakespeare himself, nobody can actually point a finger at, but I think about that time, if you were writing and saying anything positive about hemp, you were sort of putting yourself at risk for basically getting burned at the stake. Pope Pius VIII had basically decided that cannabis was one of the sacraments for the dark mass, so that this was only for evil witches. But some pipes that were discovered near where he lived were analyzed in South Africa, of all places, and found to have traces of cannabis inside. That's not necessarily proof that he smoked them, but there are, you know, a few references he makes to dazzling, flamboyant, mysterious things that happened in his life that sort of make people think maybe he's somebody who had the opportunity to indulge, and it wasn't completely out of the question in that era. And then, you know, other famous British, as we move into modern times, certainly Yeats was pretty candid about his experimenting with hashish. And
How about looking at like Alice in Wonderland and the caterpillar, for example?
Sure. So I mean, here we have a giant character smoking a giant hookah.
Yeah. Can't
help but wonder if Lewis Carroll must have had a bong hit or two in order to inspire those large sections of how all that worked.
So. I think that was interesting, you know, going back to what you said about Pope Pius and that time back then. So even back, is there like a pattern where we see the use of cannabis become demonized and then become accepted, or has it always been demonized? How does that go back through history as far as the...
It's interesting because it seems like we do this with all drugs. There's sort of all these strong prohibitions against something, and then usually the pinko artistic crowd ends up indulging in it and sort of disputing a lot of the myths. So, in fact, all the way back in 100 B.C., there was an Asian pharmacopoeia that said, watch out for cannabis because at high doses it will make you see evil spirits, which, you know, I got to admit, with Dark Side of the Moon on and the lights out, that may be a possibility. But these prohibitions against it, of course, just sort of inspired some folks to use it. And then as we sort of work up through the 1800s, I mean, the Hashish Club, Baudelaire was there, Balzac, Dumas, Flaubert, I mean, all the big wigs of that era. And then what happens is funny is later in life, Baudelaire publishes a book loosely translated on the artificial ideal and sort of saying, oh, all my pot years were bad, you know, and he sort of gets the big St. Augustine retribution and decides that no, things were bad back then. And it's funny how people sort of go back and forth in their lives in ways that are comparable to the way the entire society can kind of go back and forth. In the U.S., one of the first poems published that mentioned cannabis at all was by a guy named Greenleaf, and everybody laughs at me and says that couldn't possibly be true, but that really is the case. And then there are some references to it, Confessions of a Hashish Eater, that a lot of our listeners know about. And then, again, this sort of ebbing and flowing where people think it's great, and then they think it's the devil. And, of course, we, you know, discover that in our own lives, in fact, this is a substance that's really not something we have to worry about.
What do you think is the oldest literary or archaeological reference to cannabis use in a social sort of setting?
Oh, that's an intriguing question. I would think, again, going back to what is now sort of modern Taiwan, we see some references. And then the Thracians in Herodotus's The Histories are reported to have used, basically thrown a bunch of tops onto these hot rocks during funerals inside a tent and sort of go in there and huff the smoke and sort of wail about the dead person. And a kind of an intriguing parallel to some of the wakes I've been to.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say those are definitely among the most ancient.
Okay. And you know, speaking of other references here, when we start to get into the more modern times, the modern prohibitions, you know, when we look in the early 20th century, they point back to some old stories. And I'm wondering how those came about. Like, for example, you kept talking about the Hashish Club. And I've always heard this reference in a lot of the Reefer Madness of the 30s about hash being used for assassinations. And it was used by this sort of crime unit. Where'd they come up with that?
Sure. So back around 1100 AD, there was a Muslim guy named Hassan who had this group who followed him, and they did actually, you know, are alleged to be responsible for some assassinations. But the word assassination that we're translating actually probably means follower of Hassan, not someone who smoked hash. And so that kind of mistranslation seems to be pretty prominent, and that may have actually come over from Marco Polo. There's a version of it in part of Count of Monte Cristo. So, I mean, this is a legend that goes way back. And Anslinger, of course, back in the 30s, jumped right on this as the, you know, as the U.S.'s first drug czar and said, oh, look, this is exactly why we know that marijuana causes aggression. Of course, you get people in the lab and give them placebo or marijuana, and they're equally aggressive, and in some cases, the placebo people are so disappointed they got placebo, they're actually a little hostile. So.
Well, okay. Now, looking back again, looking at ancient history, you mentioned the Thracians and, you know, ancient Greece, and I'm wondering, you know, I think back to all the major societies that have flourished, you know, Tigris and Euphrates area, Mesopotamia, China, the Native Americans, and so on. Are there any ancient cultures where we don't find a reference to cannabis in some way?
The Eskimos, basically, folks who lived in frozen tundra, of course, couldn't grow their own cannabis too well, and were usually the last to get turned onto it, so to speak. And other than that, I'm hard-pressed.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back, too, and I can think of an example from just about every continent other than, like you say, the Arctic Circle, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and, I mean, you can certainly see why under those circumstances.
Okay, well, that's interesting. All right, well, anything else as far as cannabis and literature, just looking here for the modern times, maybe 20th century-wise, has this been something that's been more of a U.S.-European phenomenon, or has it been worldwide in just recent times?
It's intriguing because I feel like Allen Ginsberg is probably the most modern who gets a lot of credit for it, and he wrote a really nice essay about cannabis while he was high, and made, I thought, a rather compelling and emotional argument for ending prohibition under those circumstances, if not the most correctly punctuated one. And I feel like now it's almost such a given, if you will. So many folks in the arts tend to use cannabis once or twice or more in their lives that nobody seems to really make a big deal out of it anymore.
Okay. Well, you know, interesting to discuss these kind of things, you know, to get a break away from the scientific aspects, because I think a lot of the social science aspects of cannabis are as important. I mean, you can't really separate the two. The way that our culture looks at cannabis affects whether or not the scientists even get to study it. So yeah, I'm glad we got a look at this. Dr. Mitch, thanks for this interesting look at the literature behind cannabis.
Well, as cannabis users often say, it's all connected.
It's all connected. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye now.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. It's Reggae Wednesday, and we hear 2009's American Marijuana Music Awards Best Reggae Song, Cassava,
by Andrew Mystic, a.k.a. PZ, from Jamaica. PZ is from a musical family with his mother, father, and brother all involved in the industry. Beginning as a teacher, Andrew soon left his work to pursue his dream as an artist. He currently performs in an increasingly popular band with his brother. Andrew is a singer and multi-instrumentalist, playing bass guitar, drums, and keyboard on his latest recordings. PZ performed at the Montreal Reggae Fest last month. He has also recently completed filming for his music videos. Andrew's first album is due to drop in November. For the latest about Andrew Mystic, check out myspace.com/PZMystic. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Andrew Mystic, a.k.a. PZ, with Cassava.
Here comes the thing called ganja fi bun, yeah. We na jam one, yeah. Here comes the thing called bees in the can, yeah. Do you know where I'm from, yeah?
Babylon!
Go burn down me herbs and I tell me say be plant cassava, yeah. Them get for me nerves, now me see the whole of them a run like a cassava, boy. Them go cut down me herbs and I tell me say be plant cassava, yes. Now them fly like a bird and me see the whole of them a run like a cassava, boy. The way them set it is fit things get harder. Check say we a fool, that's why them jada kyada. Say the road narrow and we find it broader. Be a thing me say a gwan in a the saga. Me a fi park me the potty and jab back fi me ladder. Higher class people turn it in a laughter. While the bigger heads kick back and a roll out them prada. And poor people not even can find water. Them go bound up me herbs and a tell me say me plant cassava, yes. Them get for me nerves, now me see the whole of them a run like a cassava, boy. Them go cut down me herbs and a tell me say fi plant cassava, boy. Now them fly like a bird and me see the whole of them a run like a cassava, yes. Hear me now? Me say one quokka a full the basket. We have to reach there when we aim for the target. The journey it long but still we a walk it. Cause we can't get no herbs on a market. Truths and rights, peace, they have to talk it. Crime and violence, nobody start it. Me say from a high grade, me say the people want it. So nobody cut it down from you, no plant it. Them go burn down me herbs and I tell me say they plant cassava, yes. Them get for me nerves, now me see the whole of them a run like cassava, boy. Them go cut down me herbs and I tell me say they plant cassava, yes. Now them fly like a bird and me see the whole of them a run like a cassava, boy. Give me now. Truths and rights and me tell you a facts. Hey, yes. Hey, yes. Step on marijuana, them can't put that. Hey, yeah. Hey. No answer we no get for the question what we ask. Must you think of TV where you watch Cinemax. Say we plant cassava and burn out the wheat crop. Make we stay pan chuck and lick it from top. Them go burn down me herbs and I tell me say we plant cassava. Hell then get pa me nerves. Now me see the whole of them a run like cassava. Them go burn down me herbs and I tell me say we plant cassava. Now them fly like a bird and me see the whole of them a run like a cassava, boy. Me say the way them set it is fit things get harder. Check say we fool, that's why them jada kyada. Say the road narrow and we find it broader. Be a thing me see a go on in a the saga. I fi park me the portie and jab back fi me ladder. Higher class people turn it in a laughter. While the bigger heads kick back and I roll out them prada. And poor people not even can find water. Them go cut down me herbs and I tell me say be plant cassava, yeah. Now they fly like a bird and me see the whole of them a run like cassava, boy. Them go burn down me herbs and me see.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome. as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
One of the biggest stories that hit in the cannabis community this year, of course, was the story of Michael Phelps being outed as a Ruhr-puffing bong smoker at a college party. And it opened up this debate about cannabis and athletics. For years, we've seen various athletes in Major League Baseball, National Football League, and of course the NBA getting popped on urinalysis tests for their use of marijuana and being suspended and so on. But it really opens up the question about how prevalent cannabis use is in athletics and whether or not it's the smarter choice for a lot of these athletes. Well, joining me here to talk about this is a man from Washington, D.C. by the name of Juan Bocanegra, who contacted me by email. And Juan, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Now, what had brought your email to my attention is you were talking about beginning training for a triathlon. And, you know, for people that don't know, the triathlon is the you swim forever, you run forever, you bike forever, and if you don't die, you win. So could you tell us a little bit about your experiences as an athlete? You know, what's your background as far as athletics?
Absolutely. Well, I swam for about 18 years, and so my background is really swimming, and during the time, I received a full scholarship at George Washington University, swam at the college team there. I think I even have a couple of school records there. Oh. I also swam for Guatemala since I was born there.
Oh.
And so I competed in 96 Olympic Games, 95 World Champs, and a bunch of world circuit meets aside from that.
Okay, so you have some world-class swimming background going back to the mid-90s here. Looking back at that time and training with all these other athletes, is cannabis use something that was common or hidden or well known or not known? How does it work there in the swimming world?
I think it totally depends on the level you're looking at. At the collegiate level, I think greater than 50% of college athletes probably smoke pot. That's just from my experience. But at an international level, you have organizations such as FINA and other national type organizations that govern swimming, and they do drug testing. And mm-hmm. So those numbers might drop a little bit, but I think people still smoke pot, and for better or worse, they're still getting sanctioned.
Yeah. Now, as far as your own use of cannabis in training and being a high-level athlete like you are, pardon the pun, have you found cannabis to have any beneficial effects? Is it any sort of performance-enhancing drug?
I wish it was performance-enhancing in the traditional sense, I've been smoking pot on and off for about 15 years now. So going back to around 15 years old, that was pretty much the start of my peak swimming years. So from 15 to, let's say, around 22 years old, I personally found marijuana to be very relaxing. So instead of turning to alcohol or the typical college drugs, alcohol and tobacco, I really focused on marijuana. Mm-hmm. And obviously the great thing about that is not only did I avoid the hangovers and the negative performance that you get associated with alcohol, but also there's no hangover.
Yeah. So it may be that the
seemed like a natural drug to help with the recovery part of swimming.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with this, is that it may not be that the cannabis use enhances the performance, but it doesn't take away from the performance like the use of alcohol might.
That's absolutely right. What's interesting about this is I was recently reading an article a few days ago on the Washington Post about an American Olympic swimmer who was talking about her burnout. And while I was reading the entire article, all I could think of was she's obviously not a pot smoker. Because it turns out that the higher you get and the more frequently that you smoke pot, it's kind of like pressing the reset button on not just your body but on your brain.
Yeah.
So, you can avoid some of that burnout factor, I think.
Yeah, because it does get quite, repetitive just swimming lap after lap after lap, I'm sure.
It gets pretty boring pretty quickly. And yeah. Not only that, but I remember by Tuesday afternoon, maybe even Wednesday, your body's broken down.
Yeah.
So you still have the rest of the week to train, but really, it's your head that drives you through that wall.
Yeah. Now swimming presents another kind of consideration, of course, where we're talking about your lungs and your ability to breathe. That's got to be real important for swimmers. Did you find that cannabis use affected your ability to, hold your breath, take deep breaths, to breathe quickly and easily, anything like that?
Not in the least. If anything, I found that because of all the years of swimming, that my lungs were a little bit more powerful and my heart was a little bit more powerful, and that would allow me to take bigger bong rips back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to that whole Michael Phelps case.
I think there's actually a benefit to this.
Okay. And now that you're training for this triathlon, these are just volunteer-type events, aren't they? There's no sort of drug sanctioning or anti-doping committees in this sport, are there?
Not that I'm aware of. Maybe at the professional level, but not at the amateur level.
Okay. How's your training going so far?
It's going well. I'm recovering from a knee injury that happened about last year, which prevented me from doing the half Ironman last year. But training is going very well. I'm a year out. I think I'm ahead of the game right now.
All right. Now, when you find that you're using the cannabis to relax, you said it's kind of the reset button for the mind. How about in helping to recover from the injuries? Like you just said, you had a little knee injury you're recovering from.
Yeah, I think in general, I'm comparing it to something like alcohol or tobacco. I think those two other drugs would significantly hurt you and mm-hmm. hurt the recovery process, whereas cannabis doesn't hurt.
How about
I wouldn't say it necessarily helps, but it doesn't hurt.
Yeah. How about in comparison, though, let's look at it from a medicinal side, in comparison to the typical painkillers and anti-inflammatories they might give you for some sort of knee problem?
What's funny about this is I've never been a fan of prescription drugs, so anytime someone wants to give me a painkiller, I'd rather not take it. I know exactly what works for my body, and it's not that.
Okay, so you may not be the person to ask about this because it doesn't sound like you've taken very many pharmaceuticals.
No, I think the whole industry, I think, is out of whack, and I think a lot of those prescription drugs are just flat out dangerous.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think the governing bodies here, when we're talking about Olympic sports, collegiate sports, and pro sports, what do you think they ought to do about their policies regarding marijuana use?
Well, for starters, I don't really see any benefit to prohibiting marijuana. There are some drugs that are, for example, some over-the-counter drugs that they also ban because they might have a slight performance-enhancing effect. But for something like marijuana, I just hate to see great athletes fall and get the stigma of being these pot-smoking hippies. They really do it for no reason. I don't understand the reasoning, but there must be money involved, and that shapes their policies.
What about the argument that they might bring forth that it's a bad message for the kids to see their athletic heroes using marijuana?
I think that boils down to bad parenting. I think topics like the drug policies and marijuana use should be taught by parents. Parents should be the ones responsible for letting their kids know what is responsible behavior, what's not, what's acceptable in this situation, what's not acceptable. And I just think that these policies are out of whack altogether.
So regardless if Michael Phelps is smoking bongs or not, it's up to the parents to set the rules for their kids.
I really do think so. And I think, seeing this picture of Michael Phelps taking these, he just took to the bong as naturally as he did to the water. So seeing these pictures of Michael Phelps, I think raises an opportunity to have these kind of debates and have these kind of talks. And I think that's where it starts.
All right. Well, we'll be having more of these kind of debates at our normal national conference this September 24th through 26th in San Francisco. We've got a special panel entitled Cannabis and Athleticism, and we're going to be talking to some of the sports doctors and some of the athletes themselves about this very topic. But Juan, I thank you for joining us here on the Stash and getting the ball rolling, and good luck with that triathlon of yours.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a reminder to get involved and visit our activist alerts by going to stash.normal.org and clicking on the big United States map on the right-hand side. There you can find handy links to contact your legislators, to contact the media, and pre-written letters on the various bills, amendments, and measures that are up in state legislatures and our federal Congress. There's no better time to act for marijuana law reform than right now. So log on to stash.normal.org and click on the activist alerts. Also want to remind you that the time is running short to book your hotels and trips to Seattle Hemp Fest, which will be the third weekend in August. I'll be there speaking live on the stages and visiting with regular cannabis consumers just like you. Hope to see you there at the Normal booth. I'll be there with Alan St. Pierre and the rest of the crew. Thanks for downloading the podcast, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.